Good morning, Wisconsin. So let's pour that coffee and talk to some experts about what's going on in Milwaukee, Madison, Washington, and beyond. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's the Political Power Hour on WTMJ. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Should we talk about the government?
Hey, happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome, yes, to the Political Power Hour, 620 WTMJ. Got a great hour today. Rick Essenberg is going to join us at about 9:35. Scheduled to join us, I should say. You never quite know with guests, but Rick, the president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, has a sort of a wake-up call for conservatives. And so I get a lot of questions and comments where people say, oh, you're too hard on Trump, and you don't like his policies, you don't like him, so therefore you're too critical. So I thought, let's go to probably one of the most respected conservative voices in the state, and that's Rick Essenberg from Will, who has fought the fight on many, many conservative issues going back to Act 10 and many other important conservative points and policies. And we're going to let Rick tell you why some of the executive orders and actions by the president may be a step too far. That's coming about 9:35. But we're going to start with, I'm watching TV last night, as I often do, and you probably have been made aware if you listen to Vince and Eric. I think they talked about this a little bit. The Middle East is always a hot button topic, you know, for generations, millennia, battles between different faiths over land. It's gone back and forth. Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and others have battled over these pieces of property. Homelands is the term that they like to use in the Middle East. And the president is doing a joint presser yesterday with Benjamin Netanyahu from Israel, Prime Minister of Israel. And I'm watching Susie Wiles in the background. That's his chief of staff. If you don't know, was very active, led his campaign for president, a successful campaign. From all accounts, a brilliant strategist and campaign professional, now a chief of staff. And I look at her face, and I just want you to think about this. She looks stunned, almost her mouth wide open, like, what is the president saying? This is pretty much what he said.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job. Do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years. I'm hopeful that this ceasefire could be the beginning of a larger and more enduring peace that will end the bloodshed and killing once and for all. With the same goal in mind, my administration has been moving quickly to restore trust in the alliance and rebuild American strength throughout the region. And we've really done that. We're a respected nation again. A lot's happened in the last couple of weeks. We are actually a very respected nation again.
President Donald Trump speaking from the White House yesterday. Now, he's not wrong on a couple of those points. It is a battlefield. It's a demolition site. And there's nothing stopping the U.S. from participating in the cleanup of that site. Matter of fact, if you're a Palestinian who wants to come back into the Gaza, and that process has already started, what are you going home to? If your old building is a pile of rubble, like, what do you plan on doing? They don't have those individuals, those Palestinians don't have the resources to move that stuff themselves. And you certainly don't want to live in a dump. So that part's a good one. And the other part that I'll say the president's right on is that we do want peace in that region, something that's been talked about forever. We've had peace treaties after peace treaties. We are under one now in the war between Israel and Hamas. But this is where it sort of goes off the rails. It appears that the real estate tycoon, now President Donald Trump, is looking at this as sort of a real estate opportunity. And a quick review of comments by countries in and around the Middle East, it's not a popular idea for the U.S. to sort of take ownership of the Gaza Strip or to sort of maintain a U.S. presence like that in what is essentially a war zone. Now, the president Donald Trump was extremely critical of the previous president and his withdrawal from Afghanistan. And he basically has said over and over again in campaign speeches and since he's taken office that he does not want to see us be entrenched in these distant wars, distant countries with U.S. Men and service women who are just there forever with no end dates. It is both naive and just fundamentally stupid to think that we are going to be sort of a landlord over the Gaza Strip in the Middle East. And the last thing, and I'm actually surprised that he said this, is to talk about U.S. forces on the ground in Gaza, which is an extreme leap forward when it comes to U.S. commitment to that area. Typically, we've done it with our statesmanship and resources, and in some cases, weapons. This is a dangerous idea. Now, to the texter and texters that are making this point, he's just misdirecting the attention in the conversation. Perhaps, and the texter goes on to say, away from some of the other things that are people are talking about. Perhaps, and that's the showman side of Donald Trump. My beef with this is, one, it's not realistic, and two, I do not want American men and women serving on the ground in Gaza. It's not our war to fight. We certainly can help on the resource side, the cleanup side. And matter of fact, I think that's a noble venture to give the people who want to live there, in this case, Palestinians, an opportunity to sort of restart on a fresh ground that's not contaminated by broken up buildings, probably some dangerous elements related to that as well, chemicals and the like. I do not want us to be landlords in Gaza. And the president, for the first time, and I watched some of the shows last night, sort of made that idea part of a greater idea that he's talked about extensively, is to sort of, we are going to now take over property, whether that's Canada, Greenland, Panama Canal, and now Gaza. And it's somewhat surprising to hear that from a supposed Republican, supposed conservative like Donald Trump. Be wary of ass like this. It often does not end well, and that includes for the current occupant of the Oval Office. After the break, we don't need a CIA. That's next, 620 WTMJ. Thanks for tuning in on a Wednesday edition of the Political Power Hour. For those asking, Annie is on assignment this week. Always busy, Annie. And I can't get her every week, but as many opportunities as I can, I try to have her on the show. And then I'm off next week, so we'll see. We'll talk to Annie in a couple weeks. Topic number two on the program, and don't forget Rick Essenberg coming up, scheduled to be here at 9:35. Interesting conversation when you are talking about the Trump White House right now, and many of the actions taken by the Office of DOGE or DOGE, whatever it is, D-O-G-E, Department of Government Efficiency, led by the one, the only Elon Musk, unelected, unvetted, somewhat crazy, in my opinion, who is sort of going around and looking at ways to streamline government. Now, this is not a news story because the current president, Donald Trump, has talked about wanting to just blow it up, some of these important agencies like Department of Education and others, and certainly that is happening. I'll get to Elon Musk in a little bit, but I'm listening to NBC last night, and this is sort of a good way to set this up. And if you don't know, because a lot of people, they hear terms like CIA, FBI, Central Intelligence Agency. They collect and analyze intelligence about foreign countries. They embed people in foreign countries. They determine the credibility of information. They write reports for government officials. They cooperate with other agencies on like terrorism investigations. They can use surveillance. They spy. We have American spies, U.S. spies. Yes, we do. Many live abroad, often in embassies and consulates, or in some cases discreetly in other countries, to gather information. Information gathering so that we know what the rest of the world is up to. And to me, that's probably one of the best ways to prevent acts of terror that we otherwise maybe would not know about. Here's a quick clip from NBC News on this subject.
2 weeks after returning to office, pledging to take a wrecking ball to Washington, President Trump is pushing back against new attacks on his efforts and those of billionaire Elon Musk to reshape the federal government.
He's done a great job. Look at all the fraud that he's found.
But tonight, top Democrats are sounding the alarm that Musk and his lieutenants are going too far.
The American people will not stand for an unelected secret group to run rampant through the executive branch. Being innovative is good. But Mr. Musk, this isn't a tech startup. These are public institutions.
Musk, who vowed to slash $2 trillion from the budget, runs the Department of Government Efficiency that is not a government agency. But his team has already gained access to closely held data systems.
There's already been really tremendous progress. We've, rough estimate is that there's at least a few billion dollars a day of savings.
One of those cost-cutting efforts sharply reducing the federal workforce by offering a buyout to federal workers. A senior administration official tonight telling NBC News more than 20,000 federal employees have accepted the offer so far.
Piece from NBC on the sort of the buyout piece of this. The reason I brought it up is Wall Street Journal reported last night that the offer was extended to every employee of the Central Intelligence Agency. And they sort of keep the numbers of people that work there sort of a guarded secret because, as you can tell, there's a lot of high-risk people involved with that kind of work, intelligence work around the world, including places like locations. But I'm on its face value, I'm hearing this story. And one of the anchors on one of the shows I was watching last night, I think it might have been CNN, it might have been Fox, said, what happens if all of the CIA employees, yeah, we'll take the buyout, we're done. Anyone out there, raise your hands in radio land or stream world. Don't think that makes this country at a higher risk for terrorist activity? I want to preface this because people say, oh, you just don't want Trump to succeed. I want Trump to succeed. I want every president to succeed. I want the country to prosper. And I'll be the first one to say, because I've called for an annual review of every dollar we spend in this country for as long as I've had a radio show. Every dollar. That was the sort of the promise of Elon Musk. But this is not that. To decimate the FBI, to decimate the CIA, and just on the point of the buyouts, that may even not be legal. And we're going to get to that with Rick. The overreach by this president over things that are typically congressional responsibilities, often acts taken by Congress or laws passed by Congress, signed by the president, I get it. Like the other offers, this apparently is 8 months of pay and benefits. Some employees, and want to be fair, are not eligible. And those are the highest priority tasks. And we would never know the details because that stuff is protected. The risk is serious and significant. And I look at this and, take Chuck Schumer and his comments. There's nothing that Chuck Schumer can say to me because he's played politics for decades now and I'm just not interested. But when we're looking at this stuff, and I'm going to get to the Musk piece after the next break, be extremely careful what you're doing here. And it does open up the possibility, and I hope it doesn't happen, or hope it doesn't come true, that as a element of all of these cuts, I would say in some cases drastic cuts to important, at least I think the CIA is important, you may disagree, agencies that keep us safe from a world that wants to, in many ways, kill us, when you're talking about Hamas or Al-Qaeda, Taliban, Hezbollah. I mean, the list is long. They're not interested in negotiation, for the most part. They want to kill Americans. And when I see stories like this, I do wonder what the next piece of the puzzle is when you're talking about taking so many experienced, smart professionals. Because as much as some people hate the government, they're not all bad, trust me. And experience, as I've learned over my career in public and private sectors, experience matters. After the break, Elon Musk and his tech bros trying to shut it all down. We'll get to that after this. Local news with Connie Weber coming up in a couple minutes here. Real quickly on Elon Musk. Look, I appreciate the idea to trim government and waste. Like I said, my idea was long ago. The Congress, over every president's term, should review every dollar we spend and do analysis and research that indicates whether we actually need to spend that money anymore. But what Elon Musk has been given and granted by the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is one, should scare you, and two, is concerning, and I'll give you my reason why. He has apparently six very young men, some with high school degrees, some with college degrees, who are apparently great coders and great computer nerds, sort of ripping apart the financial piece of all of these agencies and doing it in a very sort of hush-hush, top-secret fashion, some cases kicking people out or locking them out of their offices. Elon Musk was not elected. He was picked by the president. As far as I can tell, never approved by Congress, at least to the degree that they should, which means vetting, which I don't believe he was ever vetted. And to me, is a dangerous element. Now, I'll give him credit. His ability to data mine and his use of technology, including social media, was one of the reasons Donald Trump won the presidency, which is probably why Trump likes him so much. And oh, by the way, $290 million certainly gets you a seat at the table. But we should think long and hard about the role of Elon Musk. And my fear is that he gets himself or his tech bros that are working for him, who apparently he can't tell us who they are. That goes too far and gets us in some serious financial implications that we weren't aware of because he was doing things secretly. That is my concern. All right, after the break, we're scheduled to be joined by Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We've got local news with Connie Weber. Before we get to any of that, here is now the latest from ABC. All right, I've been looking forward to this conversation since I scheduled it yesterday. The commentary back to me this week has been, you're not a real conservative. You're a rhino, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell people, I look at how I vote, and I can probably mostly align myself with a conservative. It doesn't mean I agree with everything. I certainly don't agree with Donald Trump on a lot of things. But I thought, let's go to what is a voice that most people, most sane, rational people, smart people, agree is one of the most conservative voices in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. And he joins us on our hotline, Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I am good. So I'm thinking about this today, and I've had a lot of back and forth with my listeners and audience in the last couple of weeks. And I'm looking at the issue of what Trump is trying to accomplish by his executive actions or orders, the shutting down of the U.S. AID office, TikTok, that whole controversy. It was banned, and Congress said it should be banned, but that's brought back. Birthright citizenship, tariffs. And I read a piece by you, and this I'm going to read it directly, and I welcome your comments. This is from you, direct quote, "The president cannot just impose tariffs or taxes. Congress cannot delegate that authority, nor can the president just eliminate federal programs enacted by Congress, no matter how stupid they are," which I agree with that. "When he does, conservative legislators, lawyers, and the media need to object." Explain, Rick, what you're talking about, what I'm trying to tell people as well.
Right. Well, of course, it's all more complicated than, you can express in a post on X. But, for a long time now, I think one of the leading issues for constitutional conservatives has been to oppose executive overreach. That is, we believe in the separation of powers, and the role of each branch of government must be kept as distinct as it can be. Now, there's always going to be overlap, right? So, nothing is ever going to be perfect. But what we don't want to have is a situation where when Biden is president, conservatives are rigorously enforcing their view of separation of powers. And my organization sued the Biden administration 12 times. But when our guy is in there, we decide that it's okay for the president to do whatever he wants. So that's the general sentiment that I was trying to express. Now, when you apply that to all the things that happened in the last couple of weeks, you're going to get different answers depending upon the circumstance. Sometimes you're going to conclude that what Trump did is okay. He's got the authority to do it. Sometimes it looks like he doesn't. And sometimes it's hard to tell because if all you're doing is reading accounts in the news, they often are not sufficiently detailed to tell you or let you conclude whether there's really a problem or not. You need more information. And sometimes they need to play themselves out.
So if I'm looking at the list, and I gave you a couple examples, something like tariffs or, you know, taxes, that's not really the role of the president, or am I wrong on that?
Well, so we'd have an argument over that in the sense that Congress has for a long time enacted laws which, at least under certain circumstances, delegate their authority for the setting of tariffs to the president. My view is, and although there have been a couple cases upholding that delegation, my view is that it's unconstitutional. The Congress says, the Constitution gives Congress the power to set tariffs, and just as we would instinctively recoil at a law which says that, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to give the president the authority to just, you know, set whatever tax code he wants and set whatever rate he wants, and that's all going to be fine and dandy. We should have the same reluctance with tariffs, because tariffs are essentially a tax, and tariffs are a thing that, if you get out your Constitution and read it, are reserved to the domain of the Congress.
Do you think conservative media, we have stations here in Wisconsin that certainly provide that, and across the country, they're very popular, they do very well. Do you think they understand that difference that you're laying out?
Well, I mean, I think some of them do. For example, if you want an intelligent discussion of these issues, go to the National Review website. You'll find it there. You'll find it at the Dispatch. You'll find it in the Wall Street Journal. There are some media outlets which are more cheerleaders for the administration, and you may not find an adequate conversation. But my point is, look, this is something that we as conservatives have believed in now for 40, 50 years. That's not uniform. But the separation of powers and the rule of law and liberty of government have been a very, very big thing for us. And I know that because I've been embedded in the conservative legal movement for about 20 years now. And I'm not giving that up because there's a Republican that was elected president.
I think they call that street cred, Rick. I got to take a quick break here. I want to get to some other things, including a great question about Elon Musk and what he's been doing as far as his office of the DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. Rick Esselberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We'll continue that conversation right here on 620 WTMJ after this. Getting back to my conversation with Rick Esselberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. A quick one, then when I get to the Musk question, that a texter actually had a great question for you, Rick. Birthright citizenship, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. Sort of spelled out in the 14th Amendment, one of the sections. The president has now said he wants to get rid of that. Is that an overreach, an example of the president going too far?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the argument that the 14th Amendment should not guarantee citizenship to persons who are born in the United States to parents who are here unlawfully is not a crazy argument. You can make that case. That case would be inconsistent, not with the facts of an old 1898 Supreme Court case, but with its reasoning. If you take its reasoning and you apply this, then there probably should be birthright citizenship. And so an executive order is not supposed to declare the law because the president doesn't have that authority. It's the judiciary that resolves disputes about what the law means. Executive orders are supposed to be used to implement authority as the president has. Now, I think what he could have done is he could have said, okay, what we're going to do is if there's some federal programs that are only limited to citizens, we're not going to recognize as citizens persons who are born to parents who are here unlawfully, and then that sets up litigation. And at that point, what the government would have to do is they would have to go in and they would have to say that, yeah, there's this old 1898 case, Wong Kim Ark. Probably we're asking you to overturn it or to modify it. I mean, be honest about these things. We've done that at will. We filed lawsuits and we said, look, we know that there's a Supreme Court precedent that is against this, but we think it's wrong. And then you litigate that case all the way up. You're not going to win it until you get to the Supreme Court, if you do. But, you know, there's a long history of cases in which, you know, that's happened, including, quite frankly, Brown versus Board of Education, where somebody said, look, we want the law to be changed, but that's the way to do it. But in the executive order, it says that this is now the law of the land. Is meaningless because the president doesn't have the authority to declare what the law of the land is as a general matter.
Rick Essenberg joining us on the Political Power Hour on 620 WTMJ. I've been very critical of Elon Musk, not the idea of looking at government's waste and excess, because I've said since I've ever had a radio show, every year every expenditure we make as a government should be looked at and analyzed and determined if it's actually needed anymore, or certainly have to be paid attention to when we're talking about exploding federal deficits. That's one thing. Texter asks a great question. I'm just going to read it to you and you can respond. Could the unprecedented inside access to internal federal economic data and other non-public info by Elon Musk and other people related to President Trump be considered SEC violations if they use that, this is the kind of the trigger here, to benefit their own businesses?
Well, I mean, that's a complicated question. It depends what they do. But certainly, you know, there is this issue of, for example, insider trading, where somebody has certain types of non-public information and they use that basically to play the market and gain a profit. We hear a lot about that with respect to members of Congress. And, you know, that would apply here, too. I wouldn't say I agree with everything that comes out of Elon Musk's mouth, but I would want to direct it away from the person of Elon Musk. It certainly isn't unprecedented for presidents to have temporary or part-time employees. Apparently, I guess that's Musk's status now.
Right.
In some ways, I have to say, just to say something provocative, because I know you like that. I think that the early weeks of the Trump administration are reminding me a lot of FDR, because FDR had this brain trust. He had these dollar a year men, who would come in and he would rely on their advice. And he wanted to move fast and break things, right? He talked about bold experimentation. Kamala Harris borrowed that term in her election campaign. Conservatives, I think, quite rightly criticized that. I don't think it's the job of the government to be engaged regularly in bold experimentation. But in some ways, that's what Trump is doing, too. And as I said before, sometimes he does it lawfully, sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes it's good ideas, sometimes it's bad ideas. I think the tariffs are a horrible idea, but I think there's a parallel to be drawn between Trump and FDR. But I want to be clear, I don't think it's a good parallel. I don't think that that's something that I want, or that as a general matter, conservatives have not wanted their government to be doing. They have traditionally wanted more limited government.
Real quick, because I only got about a minute left, less than a minute, actually. Did the immunity decision by the U.S. Supreme Court sort of embolden President Trump to be able to just at least have the hubris to say, I'm going to do these things whether you like it or not, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would agree with that, because I don't think that presidents have generally acted because they fear criminal liability. And you have to keep in mind that, a president can do all sorts of things. FDR did all sorts of things. And but even if they have immunity from criminal liability for the way in which they do their job, they are not immune, and the government is not immune from civil the question of constitutionality of this stuff. And so a bigger constraint on presidents has always been is this a position that I can defend in court and get away with in some ways? And I will see what happens as all of this plays itself out.
There will be lawyers. Always appreciate your wisdom, my friend. Be well. We'll talk again down the road.
All right. Take care, Steve.
All right, that was Rick Essenberg. We'll take a quick break here and wind it up to the news at the top of the hour and, of course, the upswing following that. Real quick before I get out of here and make way for the local news and latest from ABC and, of course, the upswing with Jeff Sherman. The Mustang is interesting to me because some members of Congress have actually asked for the names of the five or six young men, all men, who are sort of working with Elon Musk in sort of this non-transparent look at how we spend our money, including access to some very high-level, sensitive personal data about Americans, social security numbers, and the like. And Elon Musk basically said yesterday that to release those names would be a crime. Now, that's not true, but that's the sort of thing that Elon Musk says these days. And the fact that he has these individuals, again, unvetted individuals, we don't know anything about these people. There's starting to be some reporting on who they might be, is a serious risk to this country. Why do I say that? Because when you have access to very sensitive data, including financial access, and we know this country's worth trillions and trillions of dollars, who's to say one of these five or six individuals couldn't shift money in a form and fashion that is horrifically and dynamically damaging to this country? When you hear these stories, you know, ransomware and all this stuff, and if these individuals are playing around with these in these areas that are highly sensitive, I don't know who these people are. And I think that's a fear that we should be thinking about. And again, I want to be clear on this. I support any initiative to look at how every dollar is spent. Absolutely. We should have done that years ago, and we should do it every year going forward. Because frankly, our budgets are out of control. That's a good thing. I would not hand that power, unregulated, unfettered access to Elon Musk. Don't trust him. I don't even like him. And that's the concern. And to the texter who asking, well, what is, you know, Rick's not a conservative. I've seen these texts before. Rick Essenberg is considered one of the most prolific, smart, bona fide conservatives in the state of Wisconsin. Ask somebody who actually knows about politics. That's why I had him on. Because when Rick says it's overreach or not allowed, some of the executive actions, and there's some gray, Rick alluded to that, or spoke to that. That's something you should pay attention to. It's not just me saying it. It's, in your world, real conservatives like Rick Essenberg. News is next on 620 WTMJ.